You're listening to Tech Talk Radio in your backyard and worldwide on the pod.
Every once in a while, a revolutionary product comes along that changes everything.
Hello, welcome please to Telstra Customer Service. How may I be helping you?
Conform or be consumed.
Today is a very important day in Australia's history.
I heard a rumour today.
I like your rumours.
I know, as a parent, I would often say to my children, you've just spoken to this person for 8 hours at school, how can you sit online and chat to them for another 5 hours?
What is your environmental policy?
To sell Telstra.
You heard of road rage?
Yes.
What about web rage?
And within a few minutes.
Minutes?
Yeah, minutes. It's not minutes. XG, mate.
On air, on the internet, and on the pod. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Hello everyone, this is Tech Talk Radio and I'm Andrew McComb. It seems that the threat of Trojans and viruses is not going to go away anytime soon. In fact, experts say it's only going to get worse, and the potential of a serious security breach on the net is the only thing that will make the global lawmakers sit up and take notice. In most modern technologically progressive communities, the law is usually one step behind the crooks. It's rather unfortunate that this scenario is most likely going to take place sooner than later. Government agencies in Australia seem to have reasonable success when dealing with ISPs and hosting companies locally. But this is not the same when dealing overseas. This barrier needs to fall if our global community is going to minimise the risk to online users when it comes to identity theft. This is not as much of a problem to internet-savvy users, but for those new to the internet, they need all the protection they can get.
This week on Tech Talk Radio.
Our very special guest today is Moscow-based Eugene Kaspersky, the maker of Kaspersky antivirus and anti-Trojan products. Eugene shares his thoughts on what we've got in store online in the coming months and years, as well as how we can defend ourselves from the online nasties today. Lydia Davis joins us with the lowdown on a new VOIP phishing scam, or vishing, as it's known in the United States, a trend which will no doubt reach us here in Australia. And it's all-out war between the major suppliers of technology and governments this week. Telstra has warned that Communications Minister Helen Coonan and the Australian Competition and Consumer Commission could face the mother of all class actions if a group of rival telecommunications companies were allowed to go ahead with plans for their own $3.6 billion high-speed broadband network. And the European Union's consumer chief has hit out at Apple's bundling of its iPod music players and its iTunes online music store. All that and more on Australia's premier tech talk show, Tech Talk Radio. But first, let's find out what's been making news in the tech world this week.
This is Tech Talk News.
This week on Tech Talk News, the Australian government announces a $162 million broadband guarantee, internet guru Vince Cerf warns that YouTube bans won't work, iTunes primed for local TV downloads, Microsoft warns Australians not to buy its Zoom media player, and eBay warns Australian consumers to beware of Western Union. Welcome to Tech Talk News. Senator the Honourable Helen Coonan, Minister for Communications, addressed the Australian Telecommunications User Group in Sydney last week, introducing a new $162 million broadband guarantee for Australian subscribers. Citing the government's commitment to maintaining and building on its achievements over the last 10 years, Senator Coonan said the guarantee would ensure any household or small business that cannot now access a broadband service will get access, whether they live in metro, outer metro, regional, rural or remote Australia, including the Christmas Islands and Cocos Islands. Senator Coonan said that for services to households and small businesses in Metro Australia, this means there will be up to a five-fold increase from the existing $500 subsidy to $2,750. She went on to say that the guarantee's guidelines would be released at the end of March and that the program would be up and running by April. Internet co-founder and senior Google executive Dr. Vinton Cerf has denounced recent attempts to curb cyberbullying by blocking student access to YouTube, the popular video-sharing website. In Brisbane last week, Dr. Cerf said it was clear that many school children had the wherewithal to circumvent the ban. Dr. Cerf spoke with ABC Radio National's business editor, Cheryl Bagwell.
There are lots of things that we have invented, you know, as a society, which can be abused, and then we learn how to manage that by saying, well, certain things are unacceptable, and if we catch you doing them, we'll punish you. So we have to learn how to manage in the internet environment in the same way we've learned to manage other technologies.
In a telephone interview with The Age, Dr. Cerf said, I believe that many young people have those skills that may well be beyond those of their parents and their teachers, and will find ways of accessing information. Instead, said Dr. Cerf, students should be taught about social responsibility. He said he was opposed to the idea of tighter government regulation or censorship of web-based video content. He suggested two courses of action: better education, so people understand the consequences of abusing the technology, and legal frameworks in which really antisocial behaviour can be dealt with. Dr. Cerf's comments come after Education Services Minister Jacinta Allen announced 2 weeks ago that YouTube would be banned from students' computers in Victorian public schools. The ban comes after a video featuring a degrading attack on a teenage girl filmed by teenage students in Werribee was uploaded to YouTube last year. Every mainland Australian state now has a ban in place on student access to YouTube over school networks. A recent update to Apple's online music store iTunes suggests that Apple might soon be selling TV shows into Australia. While Apple already offers a TV show download service in the United States, Australians to date have missed out due to the local network's apparent reluctance to use the internet as a distribution tool for their programs. In the Parental Control Settings menu of iTunes, which allows users to restrict the movies and TV shows that can be purchased based on censorship classifications, users of the latest version, which is 7.1, are now presented with a drop-down box allowing them to select their country. The presence of Australia on this list of available countries has been interpreted as meaning that TV shows and movies will soon be available to Australian consumers. Other regions on the list are Canada, Ireland, New Zealand, and the United Kingdom, suggesting that they too might soon get iTunes TV and movie downloads. The Age last week reported that Apple had declined to comment on what it called rumours and speculation. In a bizarre announcement by software giant Microsoft last week, Australians have been strongly advised to avoid buying the Zune music player from local retailers. The announcement comes ahead of Microsoft announcing distribution plans for the Zune, despite Australian retailers having already obtained stock from overseas. An online store based in Sydney, MWave, sells the Zune for $389 Australian dollars. Eager Zune owners can also purchase the device through eBay. But a Microsoft spokeswoman urged Australians not to purchase the Zune at this time. The spokeswoman said, "It's very flattering that Australian retailers are showing this level of interest in the Zune. However, any Zune product purchased in Australia right now wouldn't be supported technically." Microsoft's spokeswoman would not say whether Microsoft would take any action to prevent the sales from continuing. An MWave spokesman said they had yet to receive a formal complaint from Microsoft, so its Zune sales would continue unabated. The Zune has had a disappointing reception since its launch in November last year, especially in light of what many see as an oppressive and unusable digital rights management system, which adds copy protection to music and podcasts intended by their artists for unencumbered distribution. An eBay spokesman has warned Australian consumers to beware of scammers and professional cyber thieves who ask for payment via Western Union money transfer. Speaking to the ABC's John Fain this week, Alastair McGibbon from eBay warned people to use common sense and take care on eBay, especially with the purchase of high-value goods like motor vehicles.
You should never pay by Western Union. Pay safely. Use PayPal or, again, some other accepted payment method on the site. Very importantly, look at the seller's feedback. That's their reputation online. The person hasn't sold a similar item before. Then ask them more questions. Tell me more information about this.
Although eBay's Security Center website advises users to pay safely online by never using instant cash transfer services such as Western Union, many complaints were still received by eBay when unsuspecting buyers paid for goods that they never received. Mr. McGibbon said the best way was to use PayPal or some other traceable payment method and to always check a seller's feedback rating and inspect the goods prior to purchase whenever possible. And that's your tech update for this week.
Previously on Tech Talk Radio.
We've got you guys sitting apart this day. We have our guest Anton sitting in the middle of between because it gets a bit feisty in the studio at times.
If you're going to download a movie in the future, Microsoft want it to be in a WMV file. There's nothing surer.
The Commonwealth Bank is sending these things out to all their customers doing internet banking.
A number of competitors of Telstra have, throughout Australia, been upgrading the speed of broadband over the telephone line.
He was saying the only option is for Telstra to do this, Telstra to do that. The ball's not in Telstra's court. What about G9? No. Where's G9's cable?
Telstra would be free to turn it on in all those exchanges if they wanted to.
Yes. No. Yes. Yes.
But they don't unless they've got a competitor already in there.
I just rang through the other day and said, listen, buddy, I was up the Central Coast of New South Wales and I couldn't use your service.
But it costs twice as much for a service that is already too expensive.
So you just need to alter your APN, which is your access point node, and that's just something that you get off your local mobile operator.
If you document the bugs, they're features.
Yes, exactly right.
Entertaining, informative, and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Subscribing to the Tech Talk Radio podcast is so easy. It's child's play.
Podcasting's so easy, even my little brother can do it.
Step one. Download and install some podcatching software, like iTunes. Step 2. Find the address of the Tech Talk Radio podcast feed on the Tech Talk Radio website. Step 3. Copy and paste the feed address into your podcatching software. And you're done. Now every week you'll be able to listen to Tech Talk Radio whenever, wherever, and however you like. You could be mowing the lawn, on a train, in a car, on a plane, at work,
visiting the relatives,
washing the car. The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to this week's edition of Tech Talk Radio. Appearing on the panel this evening, Graham Callaghan. Good evening, Graham.
Good evening, Andrew. How are you?
But who's this little fella sitting next to you?
I don't know.
He walked in the room before and we go, who's he? Dr. Ron, you've been working covertly on your mum's PC. Did you bring a note?
I didn't bring a note.
Hello, Mrs. Dr. Ron.
I'm Mrs. Dr. Ron, unfortunately. No, I didn't bring a note. Hello, everybody. It's great to be back. Oh, I was getting all sentimental before. It's been a month, I think, since I've been in the studios here.
I won't ask. It's personal, probably, no doubt. But anyway,
it's all business.
It's lovely to have you back.
Thank you very much. It's great to be back. But I have enjoyed listening to all of the episodes you guys have been churning out. It's been some fantastic discussion, some feisty rhetoric.
Feisty?
There's been a bit of back and forth in the sort of best possible... Yes, and some very well-considered and intelligent discussions.
Have you missed some of the opportunities that you would otherwise normally have had? Because we've put the boots into a few organisations.
I have.
Not to mention others in the others, people sitting here putting boots into everyone. Oh, it's been terrific.
No, I've been sitting on public transport listening on my MP3 player and wanting to, chip in and shout out about what I've been hearing. And
Well, here we are. You've got 20 seconds. So what have you been hearing that you want to shout out about?
Well,
there we go.
Now,
so, yeah.
No, well, it's been out of practice. Oh, that's exactly right. There's been lots of news, hasn't there?
You probably had a list a mile long, like you normally... Like, I come in here on the nights and you think, I've got to talk about A, B, C, D, and E, and then you just sit down in front of a microphone and you get stuck into it and you leave half the things out.
Well, you do. You cover off topic A and part of B, but you've still got two or three pages of things that you haven't even touched upon.
Now, we're very tight tonight for time, so we should run the lean and mean machine that is Tech Talk Radio here and talk about a few interesting things that came up in the press. And the first thing today, it reported in the Australian, Telstra... Broadband lawsuit threat. Now, how about this, guys? Telstra has warned that Communications Minister Helen Coonan and the Australian Competition and Consumer Commission would face the mother of all class actions. Where have we heard that before? If a group of rival telecommunications companies were allowed to go ahead with their plans for their own $3.6 billion high-speed broadband network. Okay, you guessed it. Phil Burgess has been let loose again and is creating a ruckus. And he also had a go at David Kirk, who's the Fairfax chief, for saying that Australia's poor level of broadband rollout was a lack of competition. Now, your comments, Gallery?
When I first heard this news, I thought, who are they going to take a class action out on behalf of? But presumably the Telstra shareholders.
One would imagine so.
Yeah.
But what are they having a go at, G9?
Apparently, it's... something to do with G9 needing to compulsorily acquire some assets of Telstra. Presumably, this is access to the copper cables.
Well, Mr. Burgess apparently said the talk of a rival high-speed broadband network posed by Optus and eight other telecommunications carriers was nothing more than a press release.
Yes.
I wonder how an independent private organisation like G9 would compulsorily acquire something.
Well, they'd have to get the government on board, wouldn't they?
But what's the problem? What's the problem? Like, Telstra could have done it, but they chose not to. And now G9 may do it, may not do it.
And they're kicking up
and
a fuss.
And now they're going, we're going to slam a mother of all lawsuits. Like,
yeah, they're not going to provide decent broadband. They're not going to provide ADSL2 unless someone else is already providing it to the same consumers. And they're not going to build their own fibre to the node. And they're going to take down and sue anybody else who tries to do it. This tells us exactly what Telstra are all about.
Mm. Okay, Mark's not here to defend the company tonight, so...
Sorry.
that's one side of the conversation,
we'll
I guess.
We'll insert 30 seconds of silence on the podcast here for Mark's response.
Exactly.
We'll hatch that in next week.
Good idea. And another thing, too, whilst we're talking
about...
Oh,
he's Mark, by the way. Is he well?
He's very well. He sends his regards, by the way.
Good on him. I'll catch up with him next year.
He's got an email address. You might want to... the European Union, there's a boss over there. Now, they're having a bit of a go at Apple this week. And what they're saying about Apple is that, hey guys, you can put a CD out in the marketplace and it plays in any player. But if you put music out on iTunes, it will only play on an iPod. Mm. That's not fair. That's a good argument, I thought. And now they're going to have a go at Apple about that. And what do you reckon? You're big on copy protection, Graham.
You're
we even spoke of Zoom.
Yes, well, I haven't read the details on this one, but they had a go at Microsoft for including their own built-in stuff into Windows, and now obviously they're going to tackle Apple on allowing competitors access to some of their stuff as well. So,
well, the Zoom issue is going to be interesting too, because like that even puts copy protection on something which shouldn't have copy protection on it.
Yes,
Dr. Ron was talking about that recently. And so was Leo Laporte, remember?
Yeah, exactly right. We distribute this podcast, for example, completely free of charge and unencumbered by digital rights management. But if you dare to actually put it onto one of these devices, like the Zune, as Andrew is saying, then, oh no, suddenly you've got copy protection installed on it. Yeah. Don't know that we feel very strongly about that, but what can a mere humble Tech Talk radio program do against the likes of Microsoft and Apple and such people?
I know we're having an interview with our favourite Russian this evening. Eugene Kaspersky of Kaspersky Antivirus will join us.
The antivirus guru.
Yes, he's got some very interesting thoughts, which we're going to share with you in two parts tonight.
Really looking forward to that one.
Yeah, it was great to have a chat to him, actually. I spoke to him probably last Wednesday week, I think it was, in downtown Moscow, and it was fairly cold. But once we moved away from that, we had a very interesting chat about life in the USSR in respect to getting businesses going, as well as talking about antivirus. Yes, that's right. The former USSR. YouTube banned in schools. Dr. Ron, you mentioned this in the news tonight, and the Victorian state government, I think, has tried to do this. They're blocking YouTube from the schools here. Why are they doing this?
Exactly right. This was prompted by an incident which occurred last year in the western suburb of Werribee, in the western Melbourne suburb of Werribee.
Oh, this was in the mainstream media too. This was news around the world, I believe.
Exactly right. There was a bullying, harassment, even assault type incident which occurred in Werribee with school children, and it was videotaped and put on YouTube. The video was promptly removed, and the police are conducting an investigation into what happened there. What the education minister has done in the meantime is said, this is no good. We can't have people thinking, or school children in particular, thinking that they can videotape such incidents and put them on YouTube. So we're going to ban YouTube on all school computers in all public schools in Victoria.
That'll do it.
Well, this is interesting because YouTube already have fairly strict policies against having inappropriate content on their site. There's no, what we euphemistically call adult images or adult movies on YouTube at all. They're all taken down fairly quick smart, and especially things like this where it was a really serious assault.
Or was it criminal incident?
It was definitely a criminal action.
How long did it stay up there for? Does anyone know? How long was the movie up there for? Was it taken down pretty quick? Or
I don't know.
Because there was a DVD that did the rounds too, wasn't there, when they were selling that, of all things?
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah, entrepreneurial little crooks they were.
Well, yes, apparently, and the ban on YouTube isn't going to affect people who are going to be into that sort of thing, are they?
No.
Well, this is exactly right. And this is what Vince Cerf was saying as well in the news, that it's behaviour which is the issue, and it's the behaviour which people like the government, school teachers, parents should be targeting, rather than saying, well, we don't want to have this type of content on YouTube, let's just ban YouTube. So It's a strange approach, but I also noted in the news that Victoria has now joined every other state and territory in Australia in that YouTube...
In banning one of the more responsible sites on the internet.
Well, that's exactly right.
Really? Yeah. Okay. Interesting news. All right, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio. You can send us an email at onair@techtalkradio.com.au or give us a ring on our feedback line, which is... Dr. Ron, do you remember?
I do, 1300. It's tattooed on the inside of my left eyelid. 1300-664-882. Or if you're calling outside of Australia, it's +613-9012-5362. And we'd love to hear from you.
Senator Coonan, remember her?
I do.
She's the minister. In fact, that'll be very interesting to try and get her on the show with the opposition later on in the year because we've got an election here in Australia. But Senator Helen Coonan, Minister for Communications, Information, Technology and the Arts. What a mouthful that is.
The Honourable Minister.
That's right. She came out warning consumers today to be alert to scams that are operated by calls or texts to private phones. Now, this is new. Now, we're going to talk about this tonight with Lyd too from Palo Alto because it's all the rage in the United States and it's called vishing. Remove the PH and put a V in front of it.
Bless you.
Exactly.
Yes.
As well as the cold call scams promising incredible investment returns that have been around for a while now, scammers are devising more sophisticated ways to take advantage of consumers through calls or texts to their fixed line and mobile phones. Consumers need to be aware that they could be targeted by unscrupulous people or be able to protect themselves from often ingenious scams. And there's a lot of them out there tonight. We're going to be talking quite a bit about scams this evening. Who are you guys? Apart from the regular things like the bank scams and the Nigerian scams, any come across anything really different of recent times?
Not recently. I got a couple of text messages during the course of last year at various times that were fairly obviously in that direction. You just delete them and ignore them completely.
Well, we've got the Do Not Call register starting now, isn't it? That's another initiative of ACMA, the Australian Communications and Media Authority. Now, I think we did something on it last year, but I can't remember the exact date. Do you remember, Dr.
I don't remember the exact date, but it'll be starting this year. Unfortunately, it's only going to apply to reputable and law-abiding organisations within Australia. It doesn't mean that we can't be targeted from outside of the country. The other interesting thing you touched on there, Andrew, was we can now receive text messages to landline phones.
Well, that's been around for a while, especially on Telstra. I don't know about... That's a Telstra mobile to a Telstra landline. Mm. I don't know whether it works from other carriers. Probably not, because... That's just the way it is in this country.
Yeah, but that's interesting too. So it's another form or another method in which you could be targeted. And you might not be aware of that until you actually get the call waiting on your phone to say you've got a new text message and you think, oh, I didn't know I could get text messages on my phone. I better call this person back and give them a Visa card number. No, warning.
Anyway, stay tuned and listen to the show tonight because we've got a lot of very interesting information about where we come from, where we're going when it comes to phishing scams and viruses and Trojans
what
and all that.
What was the other one? Vishing.
Vishing. We'll find out more about that in the show too. So stay tuned to Tech Talk Radio.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Tech Talk Radio wants your feedback. Call the Tech Talk Radio feedback line or visit our website and tell us your thoughts on the show. Tell us your likes and dislikes, your technical dilemmas and program suggestions. Call 1300-664-882 and leave a voice message. That's 1300-664-882 or visit our website, techtalkradio.com.au and click on the feedback link. The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
And welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. We're going to talk about viruses. We're going to talk about Trojans, those nasty little programs that come in surreptitiously through your open ports. And we're going to talk about phishing and vishing tonight. I had an email from a listener, Michael, I think it was, as I scroll back up. Yeah, hello, Michael.
G'day, Michael.
He says, I remember that you'll be covering desktop security on the show tonight. And he was listening to Leo Laporte's podcast, where he highlighted an independent website that checks antivirus programs for effectiveness. Having just visited the website, Michael says it looks very informative. The website is allaw.av-comparatives.org. So we haven't been there, but that's Michael's tip. So maybe have a bit of a look at that. See what you think about antivirus programs.
av-comparatives.org.
That's right. av-comparatives.org. Because there's a line return here where it says
right.
On my phone. I'm sorry about that. Yes. Yep. All right. We had it's been sort of interesting of late. We've had all sorts of discussions of recent time about these nasty little things. And Dr. Ron and I, we took it to the streets. We haven't done a taking it to the streets for a while, have we, Dr. Ron?
We haven't. No, we need to do it more often. We've got to get out more.
Now, were you surprised with the some of the information that we heard about what people are and aren't putting on their computers to protect themselves?
I was surprised. It's something that everybody should be mindful of in this day and age with computers. And certainly most people, if not all, connect to the internet. But we did actually come across one person when we were taking it to the streets that said, no, this machine's not on a network. It does a particular job for me. It doesn't connect to the internet. Why do I need antivirus software? I thought, yeah, well, it's a...
Everyone has valid arguments why they should and shouldn't do things.
They do, on the basis that viruses are only going to come in from the internet. But you do still have to be careful if you're exchanging CDs or anything. Floppy disks. Or
floppy disks, there's a concept.
Yeah, or memory sticks or anything. That's exactly right, yeah.
All right, let's take it to the street and find out what they're saying about antivirus products.
Taking it to the streets on Tech Talk Radio.
Dr. Ron here, reporting from Melbourne's Eastern and Mountain District Radio Club. We're asking people what antivirus and anti-spyware software they have installed on their home computers and just how comfortable they feel with internet banking and online security.
Tell me about the antivirus software that you've got running on your computers at home.
Well, for my laptop I have AVG antivirus, which unfortunately this February stopped giving me free updates, so I'm going to have to do something different there.
I don't know what I've got installed at home, actually. I've got something. I think I've got Zone Alarm.
I do have a package, but off the top of my head, I can't tell you. I'm sorry.
Internet security. What are you using as an antivirus program at home?
Antivirus, I've been using AVG by Greesoft for probably about 8 or 9 years, a free version.
And what's the reason that you're using that above some of the other better-known names?
I'd never really tried any of the others, to be honest. Maybe I tried McAfee back on the 3.5-inch floppy days.
My other machine at home is a Linux box and doesn't have any virus scanners at all.
At home? Well, we've got 3 computers at home. My one and wife's computer and also my daughter's computer. We run AVG on all 3 of those computers, the free version of AVG.
I figure if you're not connecting to the internet and other people's computers, you don't need virus software. The email server I work through has got all the antivirus software, spam software, the whole lot, and the email program that I run has spam software in it as well, and I only go to sites that I know. I figure I'm reasonably safe.
Tell me about anti-spyware. Do you have anti-spyware software loaded on your home computers?
No, I've got a thing called Spy Hunter, I think, which also hasn't been upgraded in a long time.
I haven't updated that because I'm not quite sure how to do it.
I'm probably not as vigilant with the anti-spyware as I am with the antivirus.
Not at home, do at work. Use 3 different packages at work because we've got, you know, cable internet and all that sort of stuff flying there.
Do you have anti-spyware software installed on your computers?
I do at work. I don't have any on my computer at home. I just avoid the sites which are likely to give me spyware.
Spybot Search and Destroy. And also I'm running another program called CCleaner, very good program for cleaning up all the rubbishy stuff, combining all that with another program, Hijack This in case something goes wrong.
Do you have anti-spyware software installed on your computer at home?
Search and Destroy, Spybot Search and Destroy.
Very good, and you keep that updated regularly?
Yeah, probably not as regularly as the antivirus, but yes.
How safe do you feel online in terms of financial transactions, internet banking, that sort of thing?
I use a password, which is fairly difficult to guess.
I don't use the home computer for that. I use the work one.
I had internet banking a long time ago, and I got sick of updating it. Every time I wanted to use it, there was an update for it. This is like in the early days. I got sick of it.
I'm a lot more wary of it than a lot of other people would be. Every week you hear or learn of something new that somebody has managed to script within a browser or something like that.
How often would you visit a banking site? Once a week or once a month or every day?
About every 2 weeks.
At least weekly sometimes, in busy times, every day or two.
I don't do an awful lot of internet banking. We do over the phone or in the branch.
Would you recommend one type of web browser over another when you're doing secure transactions online?
Yeah, my preference there is to use Firefox, and that's what we use. We have 2 browsers on our computers, both at home and work. For security and also for speed and functionality, we use Firefox. But if there are programs that require specific compatibility, then we also use IE.
Do you use telephone banking at all or any other method of banking other than the internet?
Occasionally, usually just to check the balance.
not interested in it. How do you do your banking day to day? Send the missus up to the bank.
Send the missus up to the bank. Not a bad idea, Dr. Ron. What do you reckon? That's the safest way. Well, actually, maybe it's not quite the safest way. All right, taking it to... There were some very interesting responses there to your questions, Dr. Ron. That was really... Does that really typify our community and how some people are very apathetic towards it and yet some people are so conscientious about it? Graham, you're a professional.
Yes,
it does. Did you cringe there?
Well, some of it sounded very familiar to me, actually. People that... So what sort of antivirus have you got on your computer? Oh, well, I think I've got Zone Alarm.
Oh.
Zone Alarm isn't an antivirus product. It's a firewall. Be very, very careful that you've got the products that you think you've got. Someone else mentioned, and I really want to mention this, someone mentioned Hijack This, which is a great tool for people who understand
the
nuts and bolts of how Windows works underneath. But... It's only valuable, it's only usable by people who really understand how Windows works. So it's not a tool for everybody to use, to Hijack This.
So if you've got it and it's installed, Graham, and you think, oh, it's sitting there and I'm sure it's doing what it's supposed to be doing, and you don't understand what it's doing, then you probably shouldn't be relying on it.
No, it's probably, if it's installed on your machine and you didn't install it there, it's really best to leave it alone. It's been put there by a professional who's been looking at your machine, as someone who understands. Might have been put there by the people you took your computer to service it.
Tell you what, if I was not experienced in computers and I was building a computer or getting a computer for the first time, I can understand where people go, what do I do? This is too complex. I'm going to buy a Mac.
A lot of distrust there over internet banking, wasn't there?
Yeah. Yeah, well, I actually asked Eugene that, and you'll find out his answer to the question very shortly.
This is the other thing that disturbs me, is people will use phone banking rather than internet banking, and phone banking is so insecure.
Yes, it is, especially people at home, Graham, and they have their analog cordless phones. I can sit out at the front of the house in my car with a radio scanner that cost me $99 from Tandy or Radio Shack.
And get your PIN number.
I can get your PIN number, and I can get your account number, and I can get everything. But, and people will do that on a daily basis, but they won't use their web browser.
Scary.
Very scary.
Well, Eugene Kaspersky was at the RSA conference in San Francisco in February, and Lyd Davis, our correspondent over there in Palo Alto, was at the RSA conference. And I asked Lyd before, what impressions did Eugene make at the RSA conference?
Oh, he was brilliant. He was possibly one of the best speakers, because he really, you knew when you were listening to him, he was telling you, he was giving you accurate information. There was many times at the RSA conference where I just thought, you know, are they selling me an idea so I buy their product, or are they telling me something that's really worth me knowing? Because a lot of the malware and the viruses and all that sort of stuff nowadays, I mean, I wonder how much of it is scare tactics. Buy my product, you know, for $300 you can have this wonderful thing. He didn't do that, and I really like that. One of the interesting things with Eugene, if you have a look at their site, they have so much information there, which is
This is Kaspersky.com?
Yes, it is.
Yep.
One of the coolest tools that he didn't really talk about is Virus Watch Lite, which is, Virus Watch Lite. And you basically, as they discover a new virus, they put it up in real time. I think if you have their product, you get much more detail. But, I mean, this will give you, you know, minute by minute stuff that they're coming out with. And it's amazing because, I mean, I looked at it this morning. And there would have been about 20 just today added in, you know, from when I woke up to when I checked it an hour later. So it's fairly, you know, it's very accurate and up-to-date as much as they can be, I suppose. They also have a blog. They run the analysts at Kaspersky have a blog, and I think it's viruslist.com. It's basically, it's a humongous encyclopedia of information, analysis, threats. You know, these are things that you should be doing. These are things you don't really need to worry about. Things like that. I mean, just for the average Joe out there not knowing really what's going on, it's a brilliant place to start.
Now, tell me a bit about Eugene at RSA. Was he accessible? Did he stop and chat to everybody? Was it that type of meeting?
Well, he actually, it was funny because one of the things that happened with him was there were people just trying to crowd in, and they got to a point where they were overfull. They really couldn't let anyone else in. He did. He stayed behind and offered to talk to anyone who wanted to know. So he was very approachable. But also he went down to where his booth was set up at the expo, and so he hung around there, so you could catch him there as well. So he was really quite easy to get to if you wanted to. And all the staff, I mean, they're amazing, because I actually had a question, and they brought over a engineer, and he had a chat to me there and then, which was fantastic, because there was a couple of questions that I had after listening to Eugene, so it was nice to be able to have that person right there saying, I'll help you now, which was nice.
Have you ever had that experience with any other provider of antivirus or Trojan software? I'd have to say no.
I'm trying to think of if I've had that experience with anybody professionally in industry that's actually gone out of their way, you know, to that extent to help people. And
it's pretty impressive. Well,
it's very impressive. Yeah.
Lid actually set up an interview for us over there with Olga. Hello, Olga, too. She was very instrumental in setting it all up. But I had about a good half-hour chat with Eugene, and we started talking about how things were in downtown Moscow.
Being a business in Russia must have had its obstacles to get over, especially dealing with Western countries, and that must have been such a challenge for you, getting the business going.
Yeah, it is. Well, actually, not just with Western countries, but also we have quite a successful business in China at the moment, and we have a very good start in Japan. Well, in Japan, that was a long story as well, because Japanese market is very difficult to enter, and for 3 or 4 years, we were there without any success. Well, actually, just a few contracts to license our technologies. And now we are, as far as I remember, we are number 4 in consumer market in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
And we started it just last year.
How do you see your product as compared with, say, your competitors' products? Is that are you finding your market share is growing? Because over here, I know a lot of people using your product, and they've moved away from the traditional vendors.
Well, actually, if you talk about different markets, I see three different markets for antivirus software, anti-malware software. The first market is consumer, second is corporate, and third is OEM. It's technology licensing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we are number 2 or number 3 in OEM business, and this business is growing very, very fast for us. And I'm not surprised that if in few years we will be number 1. We have over 100 partners around the globe, and this number is growing. We have such a big companies which license our technologies, like Microsoft, like Juniper, also antivirus companies like F-Secure, GetData in Germany. Well, actually, most of our OEM partners are from United States.
Mm-hmm.
And if we talk about consumer market, last year we had a fantastic growth because we released our new version number 6, which had a lot of new features. And I think that from the point of view of technologies, I think this product is number 1, and it's better than our competitors from technology point of view. And also we had quite a good marketing, especially in Europe, and I think that at the moment we are number 2 after Symantec in Germany and France. They reported that in Austria we are number 1 already, and we have a quite a visible success in United States. We started just in August last year in United States. Well, actually, we paid a lot of resources for this project, and we were developing from scratch. And we implemented a new architecture. We developed new technologies. And actually, we were developing this product for more than 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
And that was very long. Long story, and well, actually, there are quite a lot of resources were busy in this project. But well, we are completely satisfied with the result.
How big is your research team, out of curiosity, Eugene?
In Moscow, we have about 500 people, and half of them they're technicians. And in if you talk about version 6, there were about 20 developers, and I don't know how many testers. I don't talk about the external testers. We had a very big team of of external beta testers. That was a community which was it was based on our public forum, and we got, I don't know, several hundred people which were testing our product on daily basis. So every day we released a new beta release, and they tested it every day. So that was, well, actually that was fantastic work.
It's an interesting sort of business that you're in. You're actually trying to defend someone from something that hasn't sort of been written yet. A virus is sort of, you know, unknown. Although you might have a better idea about what's going to come out in the next few weeks, months, or years. How safe are people online these days compared to a few years ago, Eugene?
Well, actually, if we talk about the protection against the things which are not written yet, I think it's possible to find a solution here because, well, there is a new Trojan, for example, which is written right now, and our product doesn't detect it, doesn't protect against this Trojan. But hackers need time to distribute the Trojan. For example, they send spam with a link to the Trojan, or they send it as a touched message, or they send ICQ message with a link to the Trojan. So actually what we do, we try to intercept this Trojan before it comes to victims.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a special network of honeypots and other technologies which collect malicious stuff in the internet. So we try to get the malicious code before it comes to the users. And also we have technologies which detect unknown Trojans, unknown malicious code. It's a proactive technology which intercepts the malicious behavior. And it's quite a powerful technology, and not many virus writers and Trojan writers, they are able to bypass it. And if you talk about viruses and what's going on with them, well, actually, the situation is completely changed because in the past, the viruses were written by kids. Mm-hmm. There was just one story which happened in 89 or 90, I don't remember exactly. There was a man who developed a Trojan, and that was in the old MS-DOS time, and this Trojan counted the number of computer reboot, and it encrypted the data and left the message to pay money for decryption utility. And it was a famous story, and the name was AIDS Trojan. All the viruses and Trojans, they were written by hooligans.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's completely different. Still there are Trojans and still there are viruses which are written by kids. But well, actually, the number of these malicious samples is not visible comparing to the criminal samples.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a lot of them. And the bad thing is that the number of samples is growing very quick. Number of new samples. And in last year, the number of new samples which we receive, it was 3.5 times bigger than in 2005.
Do you think that's going to grow, Eugene? 3 to 5 times?
Yes, I'm afraid it will grow because, well, actually, it's a very low-risk business for them. And there are not so many incidents that are investigated, and there are not so many hackers are arrested. Last year, I estimate that there were about 100 arrests around the globe. At the same time, I estimate that there are thousands of people in this business. But clever guys, they still develop the malicious code, and to find them, it's very difficult. Because, first of all, internet is anonymous, mm-hmm. and it's possible to behave in the internet being without disclosing yourself. And second reason why it's so difficult to investigate the case, the criminal cases, it's because there are many such cases are international.
Mm-hmm.
So the hackers, they attack victims in the different countries. And internet doesn't have borders. But to connect police departments from different countries, it's very, very difficult. It takes time. It takes long time to send papers, to send, just to connect police from different countries. It takes long, long time. During that time, the hackers, they already escaped, and they behave in different territories. Well, actually, it's possible to investigate these cases. It's possible to investigate every single case, but it's really, really difficult. That's why this is very low risk business, and there are not so many. There are just few arrests. And that's why there are more and more hackers in this business.
Getting cooperation from local ISPs and local providers is pretty easy. They can find out who was connected at what IP address at what time. But as soon as you go offshore, if you try and get in touch with an AOL or a Verizon
it
falls on deaf ears.
But it's not enough. Well, actually, if you talk about local police departments and local ISPs, it will not protect you about hackers from China, from Russia, from United States. And what I think about is some kind of international Internet Interpol. Well, actually, there are such an organization already in Europe, and there are some movement into this direction, but without some visible success.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, there is still no such organization which will control the international criminal investigations.
It would have to be a fairly big wish, I think. I don't think we're going to see that in the next little bit, but hopefully...
Actually, it's my dream. It's my dream to have an Internet Interpol.
Well, I think it's going to be one of the only ways we can sort of tame this sprawl of internet crime that we're seeing. Do you think the phishing side of things, like you were talking before about young kids doing all these... you know, stunts, which I've sort of made a note here about, you know, being look what I did type sort of self-gratification. But it's all moved now into the criminal element. They're doing this all this thing like phishing and trying to capture people's identities. Are we going to see more of this?
Yes, of course. Exactly. Well, actually, if they don't invest more into the police investigations, we'll have more and more hackers and more criminals. And actually, it's a... well, there are more and more people are connecting to the internet, and well, for example, if we talk about countries which develop more viruses, the leader is China, and I'm not surprised if in a few years there will be 500 million people from China connected to the internet, and if some percent of them they are criminals. Well, actually, there will be no protection at all. The internet will die because of the criminal attacks. I'm afraid in the future the situation will be out of the control. And antivirus companies will not help you because there will be too many criminals. And another bad thing is that these criminals, they are getting more and more experienced. And they started to use special technologies to bypass protections. They started to use mutation technologies, rootkit technologies. They kill antivirus processes in the in computer, and well, actually, they fight against antivirus protection, and they do it better and better.
Eugene, Microsoft have a phishing filter built into their Internet Explorer 7, and so does Firefox.
Well,
are they good? Do they work, or are they just a token gesture?
Well, actually, it works, but it doesn't protect against all the threats, all these phishing messages. And, well, actually, what's going on? I'll show you just one example. At the end of 90s, the main threat was viruses for Microsoft Office. I think you remember there were macro viruses. And
in the macros,
What happened? Microsoft developed the protection against macro viruses, and they simply disabled the macros by default.
Mm-hmm.
So on most of installations, the macro scripts they just didn't run, and macro viruses disappeared. But so what? Virus writers migrated into different zones. Into script viruses, into executable viruses, etc., etc. So, well, actually, if operating systems, they are like modern operating systems. They are like a very big house with many, many doors and windows. And if you close just one door, it doesn't mean that the home is protected because there are many other doors and many windows.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Our guest this evening on Tech Talk Radio is Eugene Kaspersky. He's the man behind Kaspersky.com, the antivirus software. We'll return in a moment and we'll find out more about this very interesting trend that we're starting to see.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Subscribing to the Tech Talk Radio podcast is so easy. It's child's play.
Podcasting's so easy, even my little brother can do it.
Step one, visit the iTunes Music Store and search for Tech Talk Radio in the podcast section. Step two, click subscribe and you're done. Now every week you'll be able to listen to Tech Talk Radio whenever, wherever and however you like. You could be mowing the lawn, on a train, in a car, on a plane, at work,
visiting the relatives, washing the car.
The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. This week, Dr. Ron and Graham Callaghan here, and your host, Andrew McComb. What did you make of all of that, Dr. Ron? The Interpol for the global safety of all of us online commuters?
Intriguing. Fantastic interview, Andrew. I'm looking forward to part two, which is coming up shortly. The Internet Interpol is what Eugene was referring to there. It's a fantastic idea. I'm sorry to say that I can't ever see it ever working, ever, but that's because of political boundaries and jurisdictional
pessimistic sort of person
legal boundaries across borders and things like that.
He's quite right though,
Andrew. I'm trying to be a realist, but it would be fantastic to have.
You only need one country to not participate, and all of the bad guys will move their operations into that country.
Well, Eugene was sort of pointing the finger at China there, wasn't he?
Well, this is the issue. You see, you're going to find that countries like Australia, New Zealand, the United States, the Western European countries, they're all on board anyway at the moment. All of the law enforcement agencies talk to each other and cooperate very well. The issue is if you've got people who are doing things in North Korea or China, there is no cooperation, there are no formal arrangements set up jurisdictionally, and it's an absolute nightmare. But, I mean, it would be great to see an Internet Interpol. It would be very valuable.
I think so. It might take a big event to do that, but we'll see what happens, I guess. Let's continue our discussion with Eugene Kaspersky of Kaspersky.com. Yes, from Moscow last week.
One of the guest speakers at the RSA conference described Microsoft as having too many fingers in the pie. That is, they're doing their own antivirus and they're building their software, which is susceptible to these viruses. In the new 2007 Vista and Office range, have you noticed any changes to the way they're doing things to try and protect users from viruses and trojans?
Well, actually, I think that for virus writers, criminals, almost nothing will be changed because it's a quite similar operating system, quite similar to XP, with some security innovations, with some security features, but it's very easy to bypass these features, to bypass the security. But on the other hand, antivirus companies and security companies, which have to develop the kernel-level software, they are in a more difficult position because hackers, they don't sign license agreement with Microsoft. And they are not forced to follow all the Microsoft rules. Mm. And antivirus companies, legal companies, they have to follow all that. So, unfortunately, we are in hackers now. They're in better position. And actually, it's possible to develop the same software for Vista as we did for XP, but it takes more time. And if you have a look at the list of antivirus companies which already have Vista compatible products. Well, actually, the list is not so long because many companies still have no support for Microsoft Vista because it's not so easy to develop that.
Some of the competitors to Microsoft, such as Google, are trying to move their software online. Is that opening up even more of a threat for this type of illegal activity compared to just using your local word processor on your machine in your office?
If you remember, Microsoft tried to do almost similar with .NET. I can say that if Google is successful with doing all this stuff, it will not make our life safer. The viruses will not disappear, that's for sure.
Yeah. Now, talk to me about adware, the process where you go to websites and nasty little things get added and they click, trace your actions and all that sort of stuff. Is adware going to be a threat in the future, or is that just something that's heading away from us now? We're looking more in the phishing side of things.
Well, actually, malware is one of the semi-legal or semi-illegal business, and well, actually, it's a threat. It exists for a few years already, and it's not going to disappear in the foreseeable future. It's just one of threats, and it's not the most important one. I think the most important threats at the moment, most dangerous, it's of course, it's a bank spying Trojans. It's also Trojans which encrypt the user data and Trojans which steal confidential data. Adware is somewhere in the list, but it's not the most important one. The interesting thing is that few adware companies, they moved to a legal zone. And in the past, they traced user activity, they had their processes and files hidden in the system, and they didn't have installation and deinstallation routines. Few of them now are completely legal. They announced that they will display their advertising. Mm-hmm. They announced that they are not sending any user data to the internet. They have installation and deinstallation routines. And the reason of this business is that there are shareware software. It's a free software, but companies have to have some money.
Yeah.
And they just install these illegal advertising systems, and this free software or shareware software, it doesn't work without advertising system. It's like a free TV channels.
Yeah, we're a product of our own environment, aren't we? If you want to have it for free, here is the cost. The cost is you're going to get advertising.
Exactly. Yeah, that's exactly.
Yeah. Eugene, just getting the crystal ball out for a little bit, where do you see internet security in the next 5 years? We've come a long way. Like, if you looked back 5 years, we've come a long way. So what have we got in store for us? Are things going to get safer, worse? What do you see?
Well, actually, that depends on the police, I think. If police doesn't do necessary improvement in the investigations, I think the situation will be very bad. And well, even I think that the possible scenario is that people and businesses will move to more secure zones like Linux or Macintosh. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't mean that these operating systems are more secure than Microsoft. No. They are very similar. And if the people moved out of Microsoft to other operating systems, the hackers and criminals will move to the same direction as well. And that scenario is nothing happens with police investigations. But I think that in the future there will be... Well, the situation with malware and anti-malware will be quite similar to the present time. There will be more hackers, there will be more sophisticated Trojans, and there will be more powerful anti-malware products. But I think that there will be more powerful police departments, and there will be more and more successful investigations. So there will be a balance. There will be a balance between hackers' abilities, users' needs, and police budgets.
Eugene, one last question finally. Do you use a credit card online?
No. because of few reasons. First reason is that I live in Russia, and we have a very serious financial crisis back in 98, and still people remember that. So there are not so many people in Russia use online banking, and not so many people in Russia use credit cards, for example, because they still like to have cash money or invest money into the property. And at the same time, I don't spend too much money. Well, actually, what I buy, I buy cigarettes, I buy petrol to my car. That's all. I have wife.
Very
for the rest of the stuff. And the last reason is that there are many bank offices in Russia. And, well, actually, close to my home, I have two or three bank offices. And if I need to get a bank service, I just get to the office. Well, if I live in Europe, in the United States or Australia, for sure I could use the online banking. But in this case, I'd like to choose some secure online banking, because there are banks which provide more secure online banking. For example, there is a plastic card with a PIN code, and there is a card reader in the computer, and before connecting to the bank web page, you have to insert the card into this reader and type your PIN code. And after that, the connection is secure, is encrypted, and it's not possible to establish fake connection if my data is stolen from my computer.
Mm-hmm.
For example, such systems are in use in Croatia and Romania, for example. And in Croatia, they don't have problem with online bank Trojans. Yeah, I was really surprised.
That's amazing when you think about it. Yeah, or anything like that? That they try and...
Yeah, it doesn't work for them. Well, actually, I was really surprised to know about that. Last year, I was on a business trip in Croatia, and they told me that, well, we don't have any problem with bank Trojans.
Well, what are they doing over there that's right, that we're not doing in our culture, that everyone wants our PIN number?
I don't know.
It just leaves me speechless to think that in some countries, they can live quite happily online and no one's out to get them, but yet in some countries that, you know, every second, like today alone, I must have got 4 or 5 emails which were phishing, trying to get my, you know, from one of the banks saying, please log on and verify your information.
Yeah, try to install anti-spam to sort out these phishing emails. And second, I think that second reason why some countries, some banks do it, other don't do it, because in small countries, banks, they are not so big, and the impact after the phishing attacks, so the bank Trojan attacks, is more serious for these banks. In better developed countries, banks, they lose money, but I see that the banks are not so interested in developing the more secure connections, because this money which are lost, they are nothing for these banks. Yeah. It's like a cost of the business.
In Australia, it's not the case. The banks are actually legally responsible for the transaction, which is interesting, which means if someone steals your credit card information,
then they
are liable. But one of the other interesting things, which we digress a little bit, man-in-the-middle attacks, are they going to become prevalent, do you think?
Well, actually, this problem is getting more and more serious, and we have more and more requests to help companies to investigate these cases. And, well, actually, we have, if you know, we have a special product against man-in-the-middle attacks. We call it InfoWatch.
I wasn't aware of that.
Well, actually, now we have a quite complete list of our products. We have a protection against external threats and against internal threats.
So how do you protect against man-in-the-middle attacks? That'd be challenging.
Well, actually, we have different filters, and it's like anti-malware and anti-spam. To protect against viruses, Trojans, and spam, we have different filters which protect you against all this data which comes from internet, from outside. In case of man-in-the-middle problem, we also have filters to watch what's going on with confidential data, what's going on inside of the computer, or what's going on outside. Is it sent by email or by FTP or any other way? And, for example, it's not possible to print the screen in case the confidential paper is opened. If the man or if the employee has rights to print it, no problem. Well, actually, we started this business in Russia, and, Russia is not our motherland country, and we start our new projects and we try new projects in Russia, and we have a quite visible list of our customers in Russia, and I have a very good reports from them. In some cases, there were incidents with a man in the middle, and at the same time, there are a lot of incidents when the confidential data is sent outside of the company by a mistake. For example, a person is going to check this read the document at home, but it's forbidden to send this document outside of the company. Yep.
One last question, Eugene. You graduated from the Institute of Cryptology in 1997. Yep. Tell me about the Institute of Cryptology. Just by its own name, it sounds quite interesting.
It's former KGB institute. And now it's independent and still it educates people for cryptology and, well...
Is it a large university-type sort of organization?
Yes, it's like a university. It's quite a big and many students. I don't know how many, but there's many students there.
What sort of syllabus do they have? Like, what's on the curriculum?
Yeah. Mathematics, computers, and cryptology.
Okay, and... Yeah.
And the level of this education is very good, and I think it's one of the best mathematical education center in Russia.
Eugene, it's been absolutely fantastic talking to you today. I've learned a lot.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Eugene.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Suffice to say that that would have to be one of the best interviews I've done, I think, in respect to getting information out of someone. He was fantastic all the way over there in Moscow, and I'd love to have a beer with him in a pub. I reckon he could tell some good war stories.
He'd have some great warries, wouldn't he?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely fantastic. So thanks, Eugene at Kaspersky. Very interesting. What did you get out of it, Dr. Ron?
It was very interesting. I think he's got some good predictions, and I think he's very spot on there when he's talking about people being targeted on PCs at the moment, but it's going to happen on alternative operating systems, not just Windows, also Linux-based operating systems. And you're also going to see users of Apple Macs and things like that getting targeted as well. According to Eugene, he said that they're very similar. And certainly right now, users of such systems are just as susceptible to phishing scams and email-type phishing scams as a Windows user is. What are your thoughts, Graham?
Well, yeah, that's quite true. But the writers of the malicious software are going to write for the popular platform. So if another platform other than Windows starts to gain a lot of market share, then the worms and the viruses and the Trojans will appear for it. There's no doubt about that at all. And one thing that's interesting is that with comparing Linux to Windows, people talk about Linux being a lot more secure, but the number of security updates that came out for your various Linux distributions compared to how many come out from Windows, very similar.
They are very similar. I know that one of my workstations at home that I use is a Linux-based system, the Ubuntu system, and that has weekly, if not daily, updates that come out, just like your
They're
Windows.
They're all the same, aren't they?
That's right, yeah.
It's the same concept, yeah.
All right, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio. We're going to talk about vishing after the break.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
If you want the latest Tech Talk Radio on your smartphone or PDA, visit the new Tech Talk Radio website, ttr.mobi. This is a lightweight website designed especially for small screen devices, so it loads quickly and provides easy navigation around our most popular links. You can find out what's on the current program, check show archives, and access links to the regular website. Remember, for the latest Tech Talk updates when you're on the move, go to ttr.mobi.
The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
We don't mean to sound alarmist this evening, but we're going to talk a little bit more about some of the latest nasties that are out there. One which I was introduced to just recently is this thing called V-phishing, which is to do with voice over IP and amongst other things. Did you ever
Is that
heard
what
of this?
The V stands for?
Yeah, yeah.
No, I have not heard of this, so it's VoIP phishing.
It is, indeed. It's okay. A bit of a scam. People are moving away from email and moving into the VoIP domain because of the same reason. It's not traceable.
Absolutely. Yep.
So I had a chat to Lyd during the week, and she's going to tell us all about it in just a moment. But I just thought, here we go again. Like, we've gone from one technology to the next very quickly. And, here we go. Now, don't make calls to your bank on VoIP, apparently. Or don't believe what people sort of tell you. They give you a wrong number. But anyway, have a listen to Lyd. She's from Palo Alto, the heart of California, Silicon Valley and all. And she also has some things to say about the Interpol thing that we're talking with Eugene about before, too.
The FBI recently released, I think it was the end of February, a alert saying, you know, beware of vishing, which is the voice
vishing.
Over
IP. V for vishing, yeah?
It is. Voice over IP.
How does that work?
Well, there's two ways it works. Basically, effectively, they're using, you know, voice over IP technology to fish. So you're still getting these threats from people saying, you know, your banking is vulnerable in this way. You need to go and change V this and this and this, whatever it is.
So instead of sending you a email getting you to log on and change your details, they're ringing you and saying, please ring this number. Is that what they're doing?
Well, there's two ways. They either send you an email and tell you to ring a number, or they send you or they ring you and tell you to ring a number. So you no longer, people now, and what they're saying is they're saying, well, because we're doing it this way because there's so many fraudulent people out there, we're doing it this way, we don't want you to get an email and get worried, do it this way, ring and use your account details, enter all your stuff there so you know you're going through the actual correct channels. But you're not, they're actually capturing all this information. So it's just another form of phishing that people don't really know about it. And the worst thing is, what they're doing is they're hijacking, you know, basically someone else's information. So they're using these zombie phones and zombie networks to be able to get the numbers and get you to ring through. So, for all I know, they could be using my computer.
So the caller is ringing a voice over IP number, which is could be redirected or routed to anywhere, and nobody knows, and they're getting their bank details, and same thing applies. Off they go again.
Yeah. The FBI, the chief of the Cyber Initiative Resources Unit, basically says, you know, if you get anything like that, just treat it the same as you would phishing now. Just don't do anything. You know, ring your bank and talk to them and say, have you been sending me messages?
So tell me about Internet Interpol, Lid.
That's Eugene's terminology. Isn't it fantastic?
It is.
We really need that. A lot of people have been saying we need this type of thing. There's a professor here at Stanford, Lawrence Lessig, who's just written a book called Code Version 2.0. And what he says in there is that nothing will really change in terms of the government making any sort of global task force until something very, very bad happens. And he points to 9/11 in New York and says, well, 45 days later, they enacted the Patriot Act, like 45 days later after that. And suddenly, you know, from having no laws governing terrorism, 45 days later they have. And what Professor Lessig is saying, he's saying basically the same thing is going to happen to the internet. We're going to have this massive meltdown somewhere, and it will be massive before they do anything. And then suddenly, bang, you know, a month later we'll have some sort of group formed to help on a global level. So I thought it's interesting because it probably is true, because there's no will. There's no one really wants to do anything about it. There's no reason to do anything about it because there's been no major, major threat.
Well, you look at laws around the world, everything, including at a local level, lawmakers have always been reactionary when it comes to technology because they just don't know what's going to happen. And this is sort of pretty much the same, isn't it, but yet on a global scale.
Remember some time ago, do you remember the Manhattan Project?
Refresh my memory.
Manhattan Project is where, you know, they got a whole heap of scientists and government people around the world trying to work out how to put together the atomic bomb because they knew they were going to be hurt at some point, so we need an answer here. So they put this project together called the Manhattan Project, and people, scientists and government officials all around the world were working together to make this atomic bomb. There's actually a reference, there's a reference in this book that Professor Lessig wrote to another professor at another university who says, you know, this is what we need. You know, we need someone out there saying we need to set up a internet Manhattan Project where worldwide we've got people coming in and saying this is what we can do. So it'd be interesting to see if they could do it. I'd love to see it, but it's just, like you said, there's just too many, you know, within from California to, you know, Washington, you know, there's so many laws that are different from here to there anyway, so.
And that's the big dilemma globally, isn't it? We really need to have some form of unique laws that the whole world abides by. Then we can.
That'd be nice.
Then we can nail these suckers.
Oh no, it'd be really nice. But I can't see it happening until
we need that meltdown that you speak of.
Yeah, they need to see some sort of evidence of, you know, foul play to say, okay, we really need to do something. And it's like, you know, any law. You look at it, you know, someone breaks into your house, you can't really do much unless, you know, any law. You know, with murder, you can't. If someone's trying to attack you, you can't do much about it, really, until they do, which is a bit too late by that point, you know, as far as I'm concerned. But the internet's the same way. Until something happens that causes this big bang and gets everyone around the world saying, we need to do something now and gets on the back, you know, onto the backs of the government, no one's going to do anything.
Optimistically, I think things are going to turn out all right. Pessimistically, turn the computer off, run away, don't turn it on again. Email's a bad thing. Graham?
One of the things that really every time we hear about there's a new form of phishing, this VOIP phishing or whatever it is, the same rules apply. I mean, this is no different to back 100 years ago with people selling, you know, Dr. Smith's snake oil. If it's too good to be true, it's too good to be true. Don't believe everything you hear. You know, you can't trust emails that appear to come from your bank because you can't tell whether they really come from the bank. You can't trust phone calls that come from your bank or your phone company because they may not have really come from your bank or your phone company.
A situation occurred to me, I think I mentioned on an air a while back while I was shopping, that I had a phone call from someone claiming to be from my bank. And I said, prove it. And they couldn't under the Privacy Act.
Yes.
And I said, well, I'm sorry. Unless you can prove to me who you say you are, then I don't believe you. Give me a telephone number, a real phone number that I know.
If somebody rings you and asks for your password or your security number or whatever,
tell them to go and jam it.
Exactly.
Mm. No way. You wouldn't give anyone anything on the phone.
And I've had the phone company that I'm with ring me up and ask me for my password in order to talk to me about issues on my account. And think, what is wrong with these people?
It's funny when they ring you. When you ring them, I guess it's a different thing.
When you ring them, it's fair enough because you know you've rung the right number.
I had a dealing with the National Australia Bank the other day, and when you log on, you key your number in on the voice prompts, as you do before you come, before you talk to a human being, and they can't see your password. They say, no, don't tell me your password. You know, if you sort of voluntarily try and give it out, they say no.
You know what I really hate? Is when you spend 5 minutes on the phone before you get to talk to somebody, answering questions, what's your phone number, is this the phone you're ringing from, and then when they put you through, the first thing they ask you is, what's your phone number? You say, I've just put it into the system, you've got it in front of you, look at your screen, and they say, oh no, I haven't got it.
It's a complete
nut. God, that drives me insane.
Complete and utter failure of the IVR technology, isn't it? It's extraordinarily poorly
implemented. That's for another show, I think.
IVR technology, yes. Sorry. That's right. No, that VoIP phishing was very interesting, Lid, so thanks for the report on that.
What do you make of that? Do you think it's storm in a teacup, or once, as Graham says, just don't believe a word of it and
I agree that
the right numbers?
It's the same scams, different technology.
I agree with everything that Graham said, and 100 years ago, it's no different to what we're seeing today. It's just people using the technology again for trying to have the fools and their money easily parted, as they say. She's very optimistic, Lid, but I'm being a bit more of a realist tonight. I think, look, with respect to the laws of New York and the United States, the Patriot Act is still not global. And if the United States implement something, if heaven forbid there is a technological disaster and the internet becomes unusable for whatever reason, and the United States implements laws, then that's fantastic for the United States. It's not going to apply, it's not going to have any effect on any other country in the world. And nothing like that is ever going to come to fruition. I can't ever see it happening. There's too many things. There are too many obstacles in place. You've got international organisations like ICANN, who are responsible for all the names and numbers and the internet addresses. Look at the problems that they have at the moment. They're just trying to have new namespaces set up. What hope have we got when, you know, you're talking about actually trying to regulate content and things like that? It's just never going to happen.
Feedback at techtalkradio.com.au if you'd like to participate in our discussion this evening, or visit the forum too, forum.techtalkradio.com.au. We're going to talk gadgets after this.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Tech Talk Radio wants your feedback. Call the Tech Talk Radio feedback line or visit our website and tell us your thoughts on the show. Tell us your likes and dislikes, your technical dilemmas and program suggestions. Call 1300 664 882 and leave a voice message. That's 1300 664 882 or visit our website, techtalkradio.com.au, and click on the feedback link.
In this house, we obey the laws of thermodynamics!
Cool! That thing is amazing!
Tech Talk Radio's Gadget of the Week.
Son of a hole!
One of the interesting things about being a fan of the old Star Trek TV show is to see how many of the gadgets that they used to use on that show have actually come to pass in real life.
Beam them up, Scotty.
Remember Uhura, who was the communications officer, had that thing sticking in her ear?
Like a Bluetooth headset.
We use them all the time. Kirk always had his flip-out communicator, and how many of us use flip phones now as cordless communicators?
I've got my clam, baby. Yep.
Well, Purdue University have come up with another one. They're trying to build a practical, real Star Trek tricorder. Now, the tricorder, if you remember, was that thing that Spock used to carry around with in, you know, over his shoulder in a big bag. It looked like one of those old brick phones. And he used it to analyse things on the alien planet.
Now, I've got a very geeky question for you, Graham.
Yeah, oh, quickly.
Medical tricorder?
No. This is a...
That is a geeky
scientific
question.
Yes, no, this is scientific a scientific tricorder. This is not the one that Beverly used. And what this does...
He's a Trekkie. Can you tell? That's why we gave him this one.
This little box that the guys at Purdue University have come up with sprays ionized water onto an object or the sample that you're trying to analyze.
Aye.
And then uses a miniature mass spectrometer to detect what substances are present there.
People with too much spare time on their hands.
This is brilliant. And it feeds it all into a computer and it can work out, you know, what substances are present. Now, this sounds, you know, very impractical and it's a big clunky box. It's not quite as elegant even as the tricorder that Spock carried, let alone the ones that they carried later on.
Yep.
But, you know, if you imagine using it to detect disease elements on food, you know, like food poisoning bugs.
Yeah, for customs could use it or...
Customs could use it for detecting drugs and things. Yeah. It's, a fascinating device and, looking forward to hearing more about it in the future.
I see now you've thrown me completely.
Sorry, Andrew.
All right. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. Here's the next bit.
Here it is, everybody. The world's greatest website.
Tech Talk Radio website of the week.
Sorry, I just lost it there with the tricorder. We're going downhill rapidly. The Tech Talk Radio's website of the week is Scamwatch. It's the Australian government's version of all things bad out there, which we should be aware of as consumers. The website is scamwatch.gov.au, and you'll find all sorts of interesting things there, like how to protect your phone, March 2007, all the latest stuff, scams targeting you, frauds and things like that, which is what we've spoken about on the show tonight.
Yeah, especially relevant after what we've been discussing tonight with phishing and vishing and everything else.
It is. But it's sort of a spin-off, I guess, of all the things that are bad out there today and the government trying to protect us a little bit in all those sort of things online. All right, that leaves this bit.
There is a fine line between genius and madness.
Showtime. Missed it by that much.
I know nothing. Nothing.
Houston, we have a problem.
The Odd Spot on Tech Talk Radio.
There's an odd spot within the odd spot here. However, I will explain. A Beijing court has ordered a Chinese television production company to pay a magnitude of $327 Australian dollars damages.
How much?
Well, I don't know. It's a magnitude of, I suspect it might be $327 million Australian dollars damages, but the word million's missing from my notes, to a Mr. or Mrs. Chen Bing, who received more than 3,000 nuisance messages after his mobile phone number was used by a villain in a police television drama.
Oh, really? So they put their phone number up on the screen.
That's right. Yes, it was used by... pretend in the TV drama, but everyone sitting at home has watched it and gone, oh, I'm going to ring that number.
So they didn't put the 555
Americans
number,
have a special area code for this.
We don't. That's 555. That's Moorabbin in Melbourne. 555. Isn't that crazy stuff?
Oh, dear. You have been listening to Dr. Ron Graham Callaghan and myself, Andrew McComb, on the truly global Tech Talk Radio tonight from the United States to the Soviet Union. It's been wonderful. And next week, we're going to talk about search engine optimization, would you believe, of all things. So stay tuned to Tech Talk Radio. Same time, same channel, next week.
Tech Talk Radio is brought to you each and every week by a band of dedicated professionals from within the broadcasting, IT and telecommunications industries. The team consists of executive producer and host Andrew McComb, producer Dr. Ron, panellists Sir Graham Callaghan and Mark Diggins. Our US correspondent is Lydia Davis. Production facilities are courtesy of Evolving Communications, podcast production by Graham Callaghan. Tech Talk Radio is broadcast, recorded and streamed live to the world each and every Monday night from 8 p.m. The producers wish to thank all the stations that are taking the show, including 3WBC, 3XX, Cairns FM and 4KZ. For syndication, sponsorship and advertising, call 03 9018 9043 or visit the website techtalkradio.com.au for more information. This has been a production of Tech Talk Radio Vic and is subject to copyright and applicable laws and may not be rebroadcast without approval.
Entertaining, informative and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.